Welcome to another episode of the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to the Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And there we have it. Welcome to another very exciting day in the Good Listening To Clearing Stories of Distinction and Genius. And I'm very, very excited to have he's a performance poet with a really beautiful, unique cadence to his voice. And I've really, really enjoyed researching him. Kate Cross has passed the golden baton from a live show that we did together about 3 weeks ago. She passed the... passed the golden baton to Toby, who's agreed and has said yes. So I'm delighted to keep the golden thread going. So Toby Thompson, performance poet, you are extremely welcome to the show.
Well, it's an honour. Thank you, Chris.
Lovely. I researched one of your beautiful poems today called Black Coffee, and you said, my first piece, this is when I was living in a castle with my friend Jules and her dog Bessie, who's also my friend. And I just thought that was such a brilliant way. You know, we've all lived in a castle, obviously. So just tell me the backstory of how that came about.
Well, I went to a TEFL course in Barcelona when I was having a bit of a crisis of faith in my career as a poet. And after that, it was a short step to, just a little bit further than Girona. She was the caretaker for a castle. She lived in a little cottage adjoining, and for about 6 weeks, 6 to 10 weeks in the summer, she would host guests, and it would become this kind of amazing place where people would pay lots of money to go and stay in this castle. But for the rest of the year, very cold because of the thick walls, and there was basically no one in it. I was given the run of the place.
And what a perfect place for a performance poet in crisis to find himself, in the middle of a Spanish castle near Barcelona.
Yes, and spend 6 weeks writing a poem about coffee.
And it is a great poem. And it was part of the Royal Albert Home series, which is a very interesting thing. Do you want to tell me a bit about that too?
Yes. Well, I did. I think prior to COVID and them doing Royal Albert Home, when it was just a hall, I went and did I did a performance of one of my shows in one of the spaces there, and so I formed a connection. And then when everything was first kicking off with lockdowns and so forth, they got in touch, and they were doing this really nice thing where they were doing these Royal Albert Home performances, inviting artists of like a very high caliber, who I think were doing it for free. Kind of like big names were doing it, it was Casey Tunstall and I forget the others, and then kind of up and coming people that they liked and they were working with, of whom I was one, who they kind of chucked some money at.
Lovely. And quite right too, because as a performance poet you deserve to earn a living. And indeed you're wonderful. I really enjoyed researching you. I Wish I Was a Mountain was your really seminal breakthrough piece, as I understand it. And Kate was very warm and effusive about how you turned up to the Egg Youth Theatre in a time when you were just finding your voice, and she described you as being long-haired by the piano, and then suddenly tuning into the fact, gosh, this guy can really rhyme and also play music, and so he's uniquely gifted. And I love the fact that it's obviously Youth Theatre that gave you the confidence to spring off.
Yes, absolutely. yeah, it was a real fairy tale story there, because I also worked front of house for about 10 years there, and different jobs, workshop assisting and on the stage door. And actually Lee, the director, he directed a lot of the Christmas shows, and the Christmas shows, working as an usher, I would see them kind of up to 50 times a year. And so it was really wonderful to then be kind of like, yeah, I think we did some sold out shows in that auditorium with Lee directing. And
And this is Lee Lyford, obviously, the regional, the awesome director that's based in the southwest here as well. I'm speaking to you from Bristol. Where are you today, Toby?
I'm in Corsham today in my parents' new house. It's lovely.
And also, when I spoke to you about 2 weeks ago to connect, you were house sitting to do with a cat, but it also had a swimming pool. So not the cat, but the house. Maybe the cat has a swimming pool, but I just thought you're obviously very gifted at ending up in quite lovely surroundings as you find your muse as a poet.
Yes, I'm definitely in nomadic poet mode at the moment. Not in one place for very long.
So you're a wandering minstrel. And we've had the castle in Barcelona. Where was the place with the cat and the swimming pool?
That was in Ealing.
Very good. And you described the dog Bessie as becoming your friend. What was the name of the cat? And is that now your friend?
Cat is called Joey. And I think he'd be okay with me saying that we're friends. He's not very demonstrative as far as his affections go, but over the course of the time that I was there, I definitely felt a bond form.
And therein lies the dichotomy between whether you're a cat or a dog person, because cats really don't give a shit. Whereas Bessie, I'm sure, will always be your friend, and that's the joy of dogs too. I do like cats as well. I admire them in a different way. So, Toby, you're extremely welcome to this construct. It's going to be absolutely joyful to curate you through a storyscape that I hope you really, really enjoy. And it's very, very exciting for me to have a performance poet in this space. There is an invitation for us to put a sort of couple of poems on a metaphorical plinth within the clearing. And please, if you'd be willing to share a couple of pieces, that would be wonderful too. Sure. You don't have to. I didn't give you very much notice of that.
I'd be delighted.
So this is where it's going to be a clearing. As usual, I'll find out where that is in a minute. Then there'll be a tree. Then I'll shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. There'll be a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. And then at the end, there'll be an invitation to go as deep as you like into your own URLs. So this is the stories of distinction and genius. And I think you've got both, because it's very distinctive. You know, how you do your poetry has a beautiful cadence to it. And it's really evocative. Some of your reviews are beautiful as well and sort of sum it up better than I could. His uniquely rhythmic and musical style is lyrical, beguiling, playful, and poignant. And that's what I experienced when I listened to you.
Lovely, thank you.
So hopefully you're feeling you've had some happy smoke blown at you. Here we go. Toby Thompson, performance poet. Where is, what is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think? And it wouldn't surprise me if it's a castle in Barcelona, but it doesn't have to be. So over to you.
No, I'm actually going to have our clearing be on the top of Salisbury Hill in Bath. I don't know. Do you know the hill?
I do. I've immediately gone to Kate Bush and Peter Gabriel land because of...
Well, yeah, playing. Right. So when I was a young child, my mum was working for Peter Gabriel at... I think she was even his PA at one point, but she was in the design department at Real World Records. So if I was sick one day, I'd get to go in there. And so he was kind of alive in the family, and we lived... sort of a mile up from there. And then when I was seven, we moved even closer, and for 20 years lived in a house where that was, it was kind of a couple of minutes onto the path that leads up onto the hill. So it's been a clearing, a rehearsal space for me as well, a place to go up and kind of look down on the city.
And do you normally find yourself in solitude up there whilst you're reciting and sort of, well, just communing with nature whilst you recite?
Yeah, exactly, minus the occasional cow.
By the way, I just have to say, I was once at a children's party when my daughter was much younger. She's 23 now. But I was getting nudged in the ribs and I was going, what? And we were singing Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round. And apparently I was sat next to Peter Gabriel, who is giving it Wheels on the Bus, because that's what you had to do. And I remember thinking he was no great shakes at Wheels on the Bus. But anyway, I'm full of respect for him, obviously. So yeah, that's lovely. That what an extraordinary coincidence that your mum used to work at Real World Studios as well.
Yes.
So we are atop Salisbury Hill. Lovely. And what I'm going to now do is arrive with a tree. next to the cow that you also introduced to Shake Your Tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. So this is where you've had 5 minutes to thought about four things that have shaped you as to who you've become as a performance poet to this day, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's a bit, well, squirrels, you know, what never fails to grab your attention. And then a quirky or unusual fact about you, Toby Thompson, we couldn't know it until you tell us. So over to you to interpret the canopy shaking of your tree as you see fit.
Right. OK, well, the first apple, the thing that that shaped me is, the first of those two houses that I mentioned, which was a bungalow about... a mile or so up the hill from Salisbury Hill. And it's the fact that I grew up on a farm, as an only child on a farm, in a bungalow, not working on the farm, not really learning how to do any of the farm things, but just having this kind of sprawling countryside, fields upon fields upon fields, and quite often no one to really hang out with. thinking back on it, I could see how, I've got my friend who I was living with in Ealing. She's studying psychology and therapy stuff. And recently she was learning about something called the sibling matrix, which is all about the way that your placement within the sibling matrix, shapes you in this, like, obviously we think a lot about how mother-child relationships shape you, but just the way in which where you are within that kind of, like, yes.
And within your own sibling matrix, are you an only child or not?
I'm an only child.
Okay.
Yes.
So the sibling matrix still applies even if you're not in a matrix of other siblings?
Yes, I think, very much so. And I guess that's what I'm saying, really, is that I am, possibly there's some kind of nature stuff involved, and then there's like the nurture stuff of being an only child, not having a sibling around, and then also not really having any other people around for a lot of the time. Basically what I'm saying is that I'm a bit of a solitary kind of hermit, and writing is a very solitary thing, so I've kind of wound up in this position of being quite comfortable with quiet and my own company, really.
And that's really profound how autonomous that makes one, and then it allows you to be a bit of an outlier and acute observer of what's going on whilst others are interacting, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah, apparently my primary school teachers would call me the observer. Sort of just a healthy distance and kind of,
and that resonates so well with how I first heard you described by Kate Cross, who said you were just this very enigmatic presence at the piano. I can't remember it well. It's I've got an image of you having very long hair, almost wearing a hoodie and being very contained, but then having a sort of an enigmatic quality where people, you know, feel drawn to, like a moth to a flame, of this person that's just doing something slightly unique and different.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yes, I have been accused of enigmaticism, for sure.
I'm very happy because that was a compliment, and I'm very happy that you've taken it as one as well. So yeah, sorry, back to your canopy shaping. You had the matrix of siblings and being on a farm first.
Okay, and number two, I guess kind of a related apple, is audiobooks, and just the hundreds and thousands of hours that I spent listening to audiobooks. I had one memory that came back to me of being, I think it was the first time that I slept alone in a tent in a garden. I think that was in Wales, where there just wasn't enough room. And I just remember the rain falling on the tent and having this little tape recorder that I had, portable tape recorder with a tape cassette taken from the library with a story in it, and just being so utterly content to be listening to the unfolding of a story. So much of my life has been spent listening to audiobooks in childhood, but also in adulthood, really. And I get the sense that has shaped my kind of, I spend a lot of my time working with words and the way that they sound. And I think those, all of those rhythms were kind of ingrained in me.
I get the rhythm of the rainfall hitting the canopy of the tent, and the so that can be very musical and rhythmic of itself.
Yes.
So was that the first time you heard an audiobook coinciding with your first night in the tent?
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably a bit more of an origin story than a reality, but...
Nicely put. No, lovely stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, there's audiobooks. And then perhaps leading on from the audiobooks, there was always so much music in the household. When I was a kid, there was always a piano. My parents were in bands. My mum was playing jazz piano and singing in bars and things to earn money. And it was never their main profession, but it was always being done just for the joy of it. So there was a lot of music around, and also just their joy in listening to music. And because she was at Real World Records, there were lots of like interesting compilations and stuff. And we'd go to WOMAD Festival. So I think, yeah, I was just very, very gladly infected by that love of music.
And just one, before we move away from Peter Gabriel, if you were to meet Peter Gabriel in the street, does he say, "Hi, Toby"? Is it that type of...
No. I did meet him once, I think, at a WOMAD festival, but I was about 4 years old, yeah.
Well, you've turned out...
Lovely. Recognize my mum, yeah.
Lovely stuff. Yes, back in the tree.
Yes. All right. And then the final one that sprang to mind was that I had quite a lot of injuries when I was just sort of entering adulthood. I guess I was like 18, and I'd kind of decided that I was going to be this like performance poet, rapper kind of person. And I was just doing it all of the time. But my writing process was very much vocal. It was kind of like spoken out loud. And I think I didn't really know how to breathe very well. And I was holding a lot of tension around here in my neck. And I got this weird ache came into my neck that none of the doctors weren't really sure what it was. And it prevented me from writing because I didn't really know how to write without talking. And it hurt. And I sort of went quite into my shell and wasn't really able to freely have conversations and stuff. And then I was like, okay, fine, I can't do that. I'll focus on piano. I got really good at piano. So then I immediately started practicing jazz piano for 3-4 hours a day. And I don't know how long it took, probably just a few weeks. And then I had tendonitis in my hands. RSI in the hands. And then there was... I went to convalesce in France, and sort of like I felt like everything was falling apart, and I wanted to get my head straight. And then whilst I was there, I was like, oh well, I'll do a lot of cycling to stay fit. I'll go to the, and I cycled the first day 12 miles to the beach in one direction, and the second 12 miles, and then on the third day my shoulder had burst. So there was this kind of, it was awful. I just felt like I was falling apart. Everything I wanted to do to bring myself happiness really just like, just turned inwards and just went wrong. But in retrospect, it's definitely one of those things where the the thing that at the time feels like the worst possible thing in the world, in retrospect, is the thing that you would be the last to give up, because it kind of like redirects you towards exactly where you need to go, which for me was like these things were going wrong because I wasn't listening to my body. Was being like, ow, ow.
But I love the sort of slightly karmic muse of the idea of you need to be quiet for a while I teach you how to play the piano. And then whilst you're getting over that, I'll just take you for lots of long bike rides where you become a journeyman to be able to find your stories. It all connects. It's really lovely.
Yes.
And very lyrical and very poetic. And I love the fact you also said, I went to convalesce in France. I love the fact you can find yourself in extraordinary places like a castle in Barcelona, you know, where you've just been sat with an Ealing, but also how did the convalescing in France go? And did you stop
it? Oh, it was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing. Once I got over the disappointment of busting my shoulder. I had a week of silence when I first got there. It was the first time I'd ever done that. No television or audio books or music or anything. And then came out of that and sort of like tentatively started writing again, and it was just the first kind of real deep period of introspection that I'd had like that. And it felt very needed, because I felt like I just kind of got lost and wasn't really sure what I was.
And in that process, did your voice then come back and you stopped the sort of psychosomatic blockage of your voice?
Yeah, it started coming back. It was a fairly slow process. Yoga was one of the big things, just learning to breathe properly. And also meditation retreats. That was another thing that I was grateful for, was that it kind of, just in trying things out to heal. I ended up doing, a handful of these 10-day Vipassana silent meditation retreats, which were also very, very valuable experiences for sure.
And the whole process and journey of it has ended up with you having a very unique voice, actually, because as I know, the lyricism and the cadence that you have is very distinct. And so that's, you know, again, another compliment, but it's sort of, it's the fact that it's not done, the good company of people that just are incredibly creative, but don't necessarily know how to do it properly. You know, I was reminded recently of in some of the many musicians that sound brilliant, but they end up getting vocal nodes because they don't know how to sing properly. Yeah. So Paul Young was someone whose career was very much about his own voice, but then the rasp caused too much damage, but the rasp was almost the unique sound of the voice as well.
It has meant that there's a kind of like acute awareness of the breath and the voice and the
And your performance style uses voice and piano, doesn't it, when you're, you know, I know that certainly I Wish I Was a Mountain did that.
Yeah, sometimes to be like in a piano is more of a hobby than the poetry is, but I have found a way of involving it in the theatre shows, which I'm really happy with, because it means that when I'm touring, there's a piano there.
Sure, lovely.
Yeah.
So back to your tree, lovely stuff. Okay.
Right. So that's my four things that shape me. The three things that inspire me. Well, I guess it kind of grows out of the audiobook thing, is like conversations, I guess, quite similar to these. I feel very grateful to live in a time when you can just listen to your heart's content and discover different people and conversations between people. I guess in terms of things that inspire me, every now and then I find a person that feels like, oh, this what this person has learned or has to communicate has something rich that I need. And then you can just, if they're kind of like out there, you can just listen and kind of study what they say. There's kind of I'm inspired by people that I find in life. A particular example that came to mind was a Actually, I've changed my mind. There's a guy called Stephen Jenkinson, who they call him the grief walker. He's like worked a lot in palliative care. Canadian guy, amazing, amazing kind of storytelling, like soothsayer way about him. And he wrote a book called Die Wise. But at the time when I was doing that Royal Albert Home thing in France, I was just I was listening to his audiobook, but also to lots and lots of conversations that he was doing, and just and it was a, I don't know, I felt like it was all stuff to do with death, basically death and grief. And after that period of kind of being deeply immersed in those sorts of that philosophical terrain and the stories of his experience working in that field, when I then came home, not sure how long it was later, 6 months or something, my grandfather died. It looked like it was going to be very quick, but then it actually was quite a bit slower. It was maybe a 6 month period when my mum and I were visiting every week, and they were sorting out the care and stuff. And I felt that I was able to kind of be present to that process and kind of like turn up to it and turn towards it and have conversations about it with my mum and also with him, that I definitely wouldn't have been able to have, or wouldn't have had the idea to have had it not been for this time of kind of being immersed in this stuff. So I guess that's an example of the ways that it can kind of ripple out into your life if you find something that inspires you and listen. Yeah.
And the handle, the grief walker, is extraordinary. I mean, that's seismic in its title.
Yes, he definitely owns it. I recommend anyone checking it out.
Yeah. This is such lovely stuff, Toby. So, thing that inspires you?
Right, onwards. Okay, the next one was people in my life who make great food and put it on the table. Yeah, again, that's been a big part of my upbringing. I've just been very fortunate to...
That's so deftly put, by the way. No one's ever said that. I've done about 140 episodes so far. Oh. And for someone to say, I'm inspired by people who make delicious food and put it on the table, nobody's ever said that.
Oh, surprise.
In the same way.
Right, nicely. Thanks. Well, my mum's an amazing chef, and lots of our closest family friends are... And it's just like the dinner table being that focal point. So much good food and so many glorious hours spent just kind of connecting around a table. And now I came to it quite late, but as of the last few years, I've started to really, really enjoy cooking as well, and kind of occupying that role within a social situation, just kind of like beavering about in the kitchen while everyone gets together and then putting something out. And it's such a nice antidote to writing, which is so kind of abstract and heady and wordy, to just be dealing with real stuff with your hands, with like heat and
absolutely, but that's such a profound resilience strategy. So doing something, it's called doing practical things, where you do something that's arm's length.
Yes.
Not in your head. So I use table tennis, ironically, and right. Tennis and cooking, often like kneading dough, as my own version of that. Because I'm all about the patter in a different way because of comedy improvisation, but that's very, very relatable again.
Of course. Oh, yeah, that's cool to hear. All right, the final inspiration thing. I mean, it's a slightly smart aleck answer, but the breath. I believe the etymology of inspiration, the spirit, meant breath in Latin. When I was thinking about this question of inspiration, I liked that sense that. That actually you don't need to do anything to be inspired, just simply by virtue of being alive. And like, really, that is the thing that kind of separates life from death for a human being. It's like for the whole duration of of our life. We're kind of in this rhythmic in and out, just like breathing spirit in.
You've made me think of tidal flows there as well. That's really delicious stuff. Yes.
Yeah. All these cycles. Yeah, the tide, the just in and out, day night.
That also makes me think about the good death. It sounds like your grandfather had, with the idea of 6 months of waiting for the, I suppose, the last breath in its own way as well.
Yes. Absolutely.
Also, I love the. I've never heard the entomology. What was the word? The derivation. The entomology of the of inspiration being about breath. I hadn't really thought of it in that way before. Yeah. But absolutely.
Yeah, I think spirit was. I think spirit and breath were at one point the same word. It's a nice sense of like.
So that didn't seem like a sort of smart aleck response at all, actually.
Okay. Great.
Okay, so if that's your two, now we're on to two things, squirrels that never fail to grab your attention, irrespective of anything else that's going on for you.
Yes, okay, well, the first one I've written down is impermanence and its representatives. Because I guess from the meditation retreats, that's like one of the key threads is you're kind of like, you're just kind of practicing seeing your own experience through the lens of impermanence, like noticing that everything is always changing and ending. I Wish I Was a Mountain, the show, also has, the story has a big thread of like, of kind of even mountains crumble, like everything ends. And there's something that I'm just always basically drawn to noticing endings and particularly to the effect that then has on your experience of things that are still happening, of just the awareness that like, oh, this will be a memory at some point, but right now it's like the best memory ever, where it's like 3D and you can make stuff happen.
Yeah, lovely.
That slightly melancholic kind of bittersweet sadness that enriches just of knowing this isn't going to last forever, but right now it's happening.
Which reminds me of the description of you, which is the fact that your poetry displays your delight in life's uncertainties and absurdities, and that's a really lovely way to encapsulate what you've just said, actually.
Nice. And yeah, and in a way that leads on to my second thing that always grabs my attention, which is, what did I say here? The vastness and tininess of things. By which I mean, like, I love things particularly in science, just like those crazy facts that remind you how kind of superficial the appearances of stuff are, or like how kind of particularly unique the human vantage point is, and how like outside of that vantage point there's just, well, a universe of like of different, for example, there's these facts like human DNA all coiled up in spirals. If you like uncoiled it like a string and laid out one person's DNA flat, I mean, the numbers vary slightly, but it's something in the region of the one person's DNA would stretch to the sun and back 72 times.
Wow, sorry, that was, I thought you were just going to stop to the sun and back, then you said 72 times.
Yeah, it gets to the end of the solar system. It's like,
so that's 93 million times 72 or something. Gosh.
Yeah.
Yes, you should meet Brian Cox. I'm sure you'd have a great conversation about that.
Yeah, I love him. I love that stuff. My friend Ewan I went to China touring I Wish I Was Mountain, and I had a Irish particle physicist a couple of doors down from me in the hotel. We got locked down in Shanghai, and he'd come around to my room, and we'd have these conversations about like the universe and stuff. And he was there conducting experiments at the bottom of the ocean to try and catch neutrinos. And neutrinos are so small, they come from the sun, that I Googled it to make sure before I came on here. And there's 100 billion neutrinos pass through your thumbnail every second.
Oh! Cool fact with Toby Thompson. Just say that again. That's worth, because no one understands what we're talking about.
Well, they're so small. They come from the sun and they're so antisocial. They pass through the whole Earth without touching any other bit of matter because it's all mostly just space. But they're so tiny that, 100 billion through your thumbnail every second.
I love that. I know I'm only being facetious, but they're targeting our thumbnails. It's a bit like the irony of people talking about aliens and they come all this way just to interfere with a cow's ass in Somerset. You think, what's going on?
Yeah.
That's a great squirrel. I love that. Thank you. And how brilliant to be locked down in Shanghai next to a nuclear physicist a particle physicist, did you?
Yes. Don't know what the difference is. Yeah.
Nor do I. Awesome. Great squirrels. Okay, now a quirky or unusual fact about you, Toby Thompson, we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
Ah, yes. Well, my great-great-great-great-grand-uncle was Gladstone, the Prime Minister.
Oh, love that.
Yeah, I couldn't remember how many greats. I checked with my mum yesterday. Of the bag namesake fame and 12 years prime minister.
Love that. And you quantified the number of great. I love that. That's great. Cool fact. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks. Dig for victory.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Great. Okay, now we've shaken your tree, and that was an awesome canopy shapage, if I could just say so. That was great. So now we're going to move away from the tree, but stay in the clearing, and we're going to talk about alchemy and gold next. When you're at purpose and in flow, Toby Thompson, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
Yeah, I think it's writing when it's going well. Certainly the times when I've heard the flow state described, that's been the best experience that I can relate it to. And I always write listening to music, and I generally, I find a piece of music that just makes, that is like a place where I want to be for a long time. And then I'll loop it. I'll kind of trim the end and the beginning so that it just goes round and round and round. And then it's kind of like you gradually descend into a bit of a trance state of just like fiddling around with these really, with the kind of, just these often quite subtle, it's very subtle decision-making. It's very slow, my writing process. And there's something so kind of, I don't know, I've heard that with the flow state, there's something to do with like, you have to have clear feedback. And like with rock climbing or something, you get very clear feedback of like whether you're, and sometimes I've been confused about how that relates to writing. But it's like, it's a more kind of mysterious kind of feedback where you're like trying out different, I'm kind of talking aloud, like trying out this word or that word or this pattern of speech, like breaking it up in this way or that way. and just feeling the kind of sensing the resonances of like what feels right. And then when something works, it's kind of like the ring of truth just resounds through you or something. And so I don't know, it's a very mysterious process. And when I try and do it with my rational brain, particularly if I have commissions or something where you have to finish the thing. And then, so I want to control it. And I start trying to like logically turn it into a puzzle to solve, then it all kind of falls apart and stops working.
And as we're here in the Alchemy in Gold place, is there a piece that you'd like to share at this point? This feels like it might be a good place to do that.
Sure. Yeah, that'd be nice. How long have we got?
We're still on schedule for about another 10 minutes. This is all going really well for me in terms of timing. Sure. So if you
I'll do a short one so it doesn't we don't go too far into it. This is called Stacked Plates. Balanoid. Shaped like an acorn. Stilliferous. Abounding with stars. Aelorophilia. A liking for cats. Tootle. The sound made by tooting on a flute. Siamachy. An act or instance of fighting an imaginary enemy or shadow. Zephyr. A gentle, mild breeze. Ambisinister. Clumsy with both hands. Today, I shall while away the morning hours learning words in cafes, misguidedly attempting to quench the thirst of my introvertedness with frappes, availing myself of the listlessly devotional subservience of ashtrays, peripherally training the shyness of my gaze on my waitress's meticulous meandering. Observe the way she purposefully sashays, for all the world like a whirling dervish down the gangways. I must say, I'm surprised she doesn't stoop, that her smile doesn't droop, laden down as she is, with a lonesome poet's fantasies of perfectness and stacked plates.
Wow. Fantastic. Lovely. Right. Alchemy in Gold right there. There was a lovely moment in watching you where you completely found your flow state, because there's a tiny hiccup. Yeah. And then you closed your eyes and went into a blissful state of flow.
Yeah.
That was really perfect.
Thank you.
Okay, so after Alchemy and Gold, we're going to get on to awarding you with a cake now. So this is the final rich storytelling metaphor whereby you get to put a cherry on the cake. And this is where we find out what's a favorite inspirational quote that's given you succor and pulled you towards your future. It could be what help, notes or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself. And then what we're ramping up to via Pass the Baton will be Shakespeare, and how we'll talk about legacy, borrowed from all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. So over to you two. Here's your bit of cake. Do you like cake, first of all, Toby?
Yeah, I like cake.
So you can have a cake of choice, metaphorically. What sort of cake are we talking?
I'll have a carrot, please.
I'll have a carrot, please, Bob. Lovely. Okay, so over to you to put your cherries on the cake. What's a favourite inspirational quote?
Okay, I've got a pair of quotes. One of them is, desire is the voice of the soul, which I think is a woman called Genevieve Dow, who I studied Qigong with for a while. I think it was something she said, which I just love. The sense that your kind of destiny is pulling you towards itself, and your desires are kind of like signposts towards that thing. And then as a kind of like paradoxical counterpart to that, to kind of balance it up, there's a quote of Jung's, where he says, that which you most need will be found where you least want to look. And it's just really annoying, annoying quote that's so often proved to be completely true. Which again, it feels like a kind of orienting, an orienting help, which is like, where do I need to go next? Like, and often the answer is towards your desire, but often there's something that's being avoided. That is just kind of like just out of the way in the shadows. And that's exactly the thing that needs to be turned towards. Those pairs.
Beautifully thought-provoking. Thank you very much. Lovely. So here's another, a bit of a googly question for you. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, Toby?
Well, I wasn't technically given this piece of advice, but I heard it a fortnight ago on the football commentary. it was Arsenal Man City, and Arsenal got awarded a penalty. And I just, you know, the stress involved in taking a penalty at a big football match, I can't even imagine it. It was just 80,000 people screaming at you, and then millions of others on the television, and all of your friends are going to ruin everyone's day if you commit it. And what the commentator said that I thought was really wise was that, well, he noticed that Saka smiled just before he took the penalty. He was like, he smiled, and he said, that's a really good piece of advice for any young footballers taking penalties. But I also took it for for myself. If I'm any time when you're nervous, like if I'm about to go out on stage, smiling is like one of the best thing, along with breathing, is so good for you to do. Cause I think it's just really hard for your body to imagine that if you're smiling, anything could really be that bad. It's like it kind of fits. There's also a thing I love to do with how if you lay like a plank of wood that's like a foot wide on the floor, and then we're asked to walk along it, it would just be the easiest thing in the world. But if you put that plank of wood 100 meters into the air, then suddenly it's like, I don't know if I can walk along that plank. And I often feel like that with like learning poems, for instance, and then like you can know it like the back of your hand, and then you stand in front of 100 people and suddenly you're not sure if you can walk to the end of it. But smiling is like a really good way of just soothing yourself in moments of nerve.
Great listening, the fact you've picked that up from a penalty that Saka's about to take. That's delicious stuff.
Yeah.
And yes, love that. Thank you. We could now be at the moment where, just before we ramp up to Shakespeare, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. Having experienced this from within, who do you instinctively think may enjoy or would just like to have the baton passed to them to keep the golden thread going?
Well, the person that I have in mind is someone called Dan Sue, who I don't know if I'll be able to do his CV justice. He's done an extraordinary array of things, and I kind of know him as a friend and collaborator. He programmed me for a lot of my first shows in London, and kind of curated various collaborative things that I've done with a string quartet. And he puts on shows, but he also does a lot of education stuff. He's like organized lots of trips abroad to big parts of the world to do outreach things. He runs an amazing stage at Glastonbury. He's an entrepreneur and educator and events producer. First time I saw Ed Sheeran live was at one of his gigs at Glastonbury, and it's just one. He's basically a person that I'd be really interested to listen to, get a bit more into the weeds of his how he's got to where he is. Yeah, wonderful character.
Thank you for that. Very generous. And your mission, should you choose to accept it, which you obviously have, is to just see if he'll ask the question. And in the universe of questions, yes is fine, no is fine. But that's lovely and generous of you to impart that in its intention.
I'll pass it on for sure.
And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the worlds of stage. And by the way, what I love about this particular copy, this is my own thumbed copy from when I first went to drama school. So this is an authentic prop in me turning this into a live theatre show. Inspired by all the worlds of stage and all the men and women nearly players, how, when all is said and done, Toby Thompson, would you most like to be remembered?
I found myself encountering a lot of resistance to answering this question, and I don't know if it was because, but just because of where I'm at in life, and hoping, fingers crossed, that it's a long time before that answer starts being, before that answer happens. And then another part of me feeling shy about prescribing, how other people might kind of think about me. And then I think another part of me, possibly the main reason, being a kind of sense of maybe sadness about there being more of a discrepancy than I would like between how I would answer that question, like how would I like to be remembered and how I live. It's like it feels like there's a long way to go to that place. So I think for now I'm just going to keep it fairly simple and say, like, I would like to be remembered as someone who brought some beautiful things into the world, and who found ways to express his love for life and for the people around him.
Where can we find out more about Toby Thompson on the internet, please?
I've got a website, which is tobythompson.net. And I am intermittently on Instagram, tobythompson_ after the Thompson. And more intermittently than that, I'm on Facebook. And even yet more intermittently still, I'm on Twitter. So I think in that order, I would. Oh, and there's a few bits on YouTube as well.
And does I Wish I Was a Mountain still have an afterburn? Is it still out there?
I think, well, I just got an email yesterday asking if I'd like to do it at the Pound in Caution.
Oh, your sound just cut off there at the Sound in Caution, did you say?
Sorry, I fiddled with my headphone case and it's...
Stop fiddling, I'm only kidding.
I just, possibly, hot off the press, I got an email yesterday asking if I'd like to do one in June at the Pound, Caution Pound, wonderful
thing. And please say yes and please can I come, thank you. I'm just ramping up because of the time.
Yes.
We're doing this perfectly. And great. In fact, we may even do a captain's log supplemental. Just hold the line, caller. So as this has been your moment in the sunshine, performance poet Toby Thompson, is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I feel overjoyed to have had the opportunity to spend this time chatting with you. And thank you so much for all of the provocations and for your for the gift of your listening. It's been a pleasure.
Right back at you. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to performance poet Toby Thompson. Tune in next time for more stories from the Good Listening To Show clearing, and good night.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from the clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's...
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan...
To your good health.
And goodbye.